There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Afternoon, talking automotive, talking cars in just a second. We're going to make a bold statement, a bold prediction. Whether or not that happens, let's see. Damien Reid's going to join us in just a second. Kevin Bridges is in town, the comedian from Glasgow in Scotland, October the 19th, Dubai World Trade Centre. We've been giving away tickets, two tickets all week this week. So we've taken well-known slang phrases from that city and we're asking for a translation. Why? Because he's from there. So when you go, if you're not used to the accent, it's kind of it's like an aid, really. It's an assistance, isn't it?
Yes. Mm. I'm interested to see what you think, Damien.
Yeah, Damien, you're well aware of the Scottish people, obviously, and I use that
term
very poorly. How are you with Glaswegian accents?
I have no chance. Let's
the
just
honesty,
put it out there. I have
enough.
No chance.
I love the honesty. This is very much a Scottish phrase, but this is in Glaswegian because that's where Mrs. Elliot is from. So if you could translate this, text it to 4001. Use the app if you'd like to. Put your name on there. We'll give you two tickets for Kevin Bridges. Listen carefully.
Hod your wisht.
So if I can translate that, it's hod your wisht. What does that mean? Any ideas? You can have a go if you like. I mean, we won't say hod your wisht.
Look, that might be from another planet. I would love to contribute, but
there you go. Tell us what that means on 4001, or if you want to use the app. Damien's here. Nice to see you. So you look fairly rested, having just got back from Japan.
Yeah, done a bit of running around. So went to Spain for a bit, and then went over to Japan to try out some electric vehicles and talk to some people who know more about that than I do.
Yeah.
And had a fantastic time. Just a couple of days. It's an outrageous city. It's crazy. Tokyo, we were in Tokyo and Yokohama.
Right.
But learnt an awful lot. And considering what we're going to go through here in Dubai, a lot of good information came out of it. So, yeah, sort of came back sort of thinking, okay, there's lots more than I thought was going on about electric cars.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, it seems like we talk about electric cars, hybrid cars all the time. There are incentives that, you know, make electric cars or at least hybrid vehicles a little bit cheaper. They're more attractive, maybe. Now there's lots of buzz about Tesla and everything else. But here's a prediction that you've come back with, and I'm not sure if this will be the case. But by, 2025?
Yeah.
No more internal combustion engine vehicles left.
Yeah, my heart sank a little bit when I when I heard that. But that was a very bold statement made by the president and CEO of Nissan Motor Company, Hiroto Sakawa, who I managed to sit with for a few minutes.
Right.
And he, you know, we've all been talking about electric cars, saying that they're going to be in parallel with internal combustion engines, and we'll have both for quite a long time. But I mean, to quote him verbatim, he said by 2020 to 2025. The major portfolio, which all the car makers are going to follow, will be electric vehicles, but will not be in addition. Rather, they'll be a substitute to their current portfolio. The majority of their fleet will be electrified by then.
That means substitution means getting rid of things. That means replacing product lines
in time, for sure. And you know, he's the first one to come out and actually say that. Other manufacturers have come out saying, yes, we're going to go big on electric cars. You know, General Motors came out saying they're going to release at least 20 new electric vehicles by 2023. Yeah. Volvo said the same thing a while ago. Mercedes-Benz, Audi, Volkswagen, you know, they've all come out and they're saying it. Toyota, obviously, one of the big ones with their hybrid technology. But Sakawa-san was the first one to actually come out and say, it's not going to be in parallel with them. We're actually going to make this our main thing. And the car we went to have a look at, and I went to the factory and saw the car being built, is a car called the Nissan Leaf. And it's going to be released here at the end of the year. It's a full electric car. This is the second generation. It's been on sale for a while in a few markets. But that's going to be the centerpiece of a new electric vehicle range that Nissan are going to bring in over the coming years. And so it wasn't until I went over my notes again and had another listen to what he said, I thought, hang on, no, this is actually not in parallel. This is they're planning to replace the internal combustion engine, the petrol car, the diesel car, with electric cars.
It's a bold statement, isn't it?
It is. It's incredibly bold. And, you know, they've in Japan at the moment, they could do it probably tomorrow, because at the moment right now they've got 7,500 charging stations just in Tokyo. They've got 28,000 charging stations in total through the place. So they can do it fairly easy, but for other markets to adapt, it's going to take some time, and that's one thing that they're going to have to get on board with here pretty quickly if they want to keep selling cars. Everyone is going down that path.
Well, there are plans here to introduce more and more charging stations. I think it's 100 and something by the end of this year. You are starting to see them, but I mean, it's nothing like, it's not going to be anything like 7,500 for a few years, I suppose. So what happens then? We've just got to bite the bullet and get used to this, haven't we? We've perfected the internal combustion engine, really, to all intents and purposes. They're pretty reliable. They last pretty well.
Yep.
They'll go 40 or 50 years if you look after a car. I mean, that's fine. We've just got to get used to the fact that it's, you know, the times they are a-changing.
Yeah. I mean, in my personal opinion, I think it's his wish list, and he would like that. And he'll obviously push and lobby for it to make that happen, because they're trying to sell the new technology and move with it. But the reality is that we're still... got the majority are still playing with internal combustion engines. We've got oil companies that heavily invested in it. We've got the parts and components industry that manufacture engines. You know, we're now suddenly, effectively, if we go down that path, we're now shifting the vehicle manufacturing industry away from the traditional, you know, welders and nuts and bolts guys to the Google and Intel guys. And that's a huge shift. Whether that industry is up for it, even, we're not sure.
And wasn't it Dyson that have said they're now ploughing their engineering might behind electric cars now? You know, that is Dyson want to devote their time, not to any kind of vacuum, not to any kind of fans or air filtration. They are focusing on cars, electric cars.
And they're very serious. They employed two key people from Aston Martin, head of procurement, who obviously a guy who knows where to buy stuff. You know, he's in there, and an engineer as well. So, and they've also been talking. I think they've got someone from McLaren as well. So they're serious about that.
Wow.
When you're in Japan, well, you're in Tokyo and Yokohama, as you said, Damien, and you're talking to the boss of Nissan, you're talking to people who are very serious about this. 7,500 charging stations in Tokyo, that's not one on every street corner, but that's widely available charging, let's face it. How many electric cars did you see? Could you put it in percentage terms?
Very difficult. To be honest, I didn't spend a lot of time on the road. Okay. We spent a lot of time inside factories and conference centres and being bussed around.
But did it strike you on the roads that, because here, if you see a Tesla, it really stands out. Oh, it's a Tesla, and everybody's craning and looking back to, or trying to see it in the distance. Was it like that, Japan?
Not to the extent, because here, as you say, it turns heads. But what I did notice was charging stations. And there were charging stations where a lot of cars were parked that were plugged in.
Right.
And that was one thing you noticed, because, I mean, an electric car doesn't sort of stand up and shout, "I'm electric," when it drives along. You don't know that it's electric most of the time. The initial, for instance, using this Leaf as an example, the first car was a very distinctive shape because it wanted to make a statement saying we're electric. This second generation has just been released. Looks no different to your regular, you know, Nissan Sunny, Toyota Corolla kind of thing. It's a very contemporary style. And you wouldn't know it's electric until you actually see them plug the charger in and at a parking station somewhere. So very hard to spot them on the road, but for sure, I definitely saw, you know, parking stations around there, and a lot of them were plugged into it. But percentage-wise, I mean, it's a massive, massive market for cars in Tokyo, so it's not anywhere near at a stage where they could cross over just yet.
Okay. Damien Reed's here, motoring journalist Damien Reed, with us talking about, cars, but more than cars, mobility, sustainability, urbanisation, electric cars, charging stations, more to come from Damien in just a couple of minutes' time. It's Drive Live Talks Automotive or Cars today.
This is Drive Live with Natalie Lindo-Taylor and Tim Elliott.
Our guest today on Drive Live Talks Automotive is motoring journalist Damien Reed. Damien, you have been on a trip. You went to Yokohama, and it wasn't just about cars, trip. You were on the trip really to look at the smart city plan they have there. And if you could tell us a little bit about what that involved.
Yeah, that was really interesting. It was towards the end of what we were doing there, and it was a chance for us to sit with the city of Yokohama people and look at their smart city project. And this is something that could apply easily to Dubai, because it's all about high rise and everything else, and it's about sharing the power that's been generated by cars and taken from cars with residential and commercial and office buildings. And it's something that was really sort of twigged my mind, because obviously Yokohama it went through a rebuilding phase after the earthquakes. There was a lot of blackouts. There's still obviously a lot of earthquakes and things going on there. So this is a way that they sat with the manufacturers. And Nissan is their partner in this project because that's where their headquarters, where their first factory was, which back in the 1960s, their first manufacturing was there in Yokohama. So they're very ingrained with that city. And they came up with this idea where the electric cars actually plug into the buildings and return surplus energy back to the building.
So how does this work? So I live in this building, you live in the building, Tim lives in the building, and we can sort of sign the cars out. But how do the cars put energy back into this amazing place that we live in?
Well, see, firstly, the way it gets the energy, it's now getting energy mostly from the solar panels in the building, so therefore it's not coming from a fossil source, you know, power station somewhere. So it's a cleaner energy that goes into the car. Now, the way that they're planning on structuring it is you have, for instance, a residential building, you live there, and your rent also includes use of an electric vehicle, and you fill in the logbook, and you get to book the car when you need to use it. Likewise, with a company, you get a company car. Well, it won't be your car, but if you're a salesman's on the road or whatever, you get to borrow the car, and then when you come back, you plug it back in. Now, to answer your question, is that when the cars are out, obviously they're using electricity, but they also regenerate and create their own electricity because of when you lift off the gas and you're just cruising along, it turns the alternator into a generator.
So, this is a bit...
Hang with me.
she's ruined the day she asked, I can tell, but I'm kind of still with you. No, you are.
I'm with you. I'm just amazed.
So if you drive an electric car or a hybrid car, you'll see a gauge on the dash that shows when it's starting to recover energy. So when you're going down a big hill or you apply the brakes, you're actually topping the battery up.
Mm.
And so that extends the range. So it is possible for you to go out and come back with either the same amount of electricity or, if you've been lucky, perhaps a little bit more if you're stop-start traffic because you're using the brakes all the time. And then the car's going to sit there all night. You can plug it in. It can deplete the excess electricity back into the building. Or if there is an earthquake, the idea is, you can use the cars effectively as generators. They plug in and they provide short-term power.
Isn't that great? I mean, that, amazing. That's an incredible amazing feature. The thing you don't want, though, is if you live in a tower block and, you know, Steve next door is up playing music till 3 a.m, you don't want to be, you know, offering him electricity so that he keeps you up all night and your car doesn't start the next morning. I mean, obviously, that's not the point.
Do you know where I think these would be really successful, though? Mm. Up the road in Sustainable City. There's a community of people who would be really pioneering in terms of wanting to do that. You could really see that as an ideal start place for this kind of scheme to take off here.
Well, they've started as they mean to go on, I guess, there, haven't they? There are electric cars up there, and that's how you ferry the shopping from the car park to your house, for example. So there's sort of baby steps, I suppose, you can see.
For sure, and I think, obviously, they're going to be like-minded people to start with. When you create a building like this and it includes that in your rent, someone who's not into it is not going to pay the extra rent to use an electric vehicle that's not theirs all the time. So you're going to get a bunch of like-minded people to start with. And I'm predicting it'll probably start in the commercial side first, in an office block with the cars that sit downstairs all day while you're upstairs working.
Yeah.
Those cars can go in and out and be stationed there. And I think that's probably where it'll start. It'll go into green residential areas in time, and then way, way down the track, then it'll perhaps be something that we all...
Well, that makes a lot of sense. If you think about companies with extended fleets, you know, those fleets need to be managed. We're starting to see telematics become more and more important here. And I suppose the natural next step is you've got a big sales force, you've got lots of salesmen out in cars. That's certainly where it would start.
Well, there's a lot at the moment. Yeah, there's a push towards company cars and how much time they sit idle, and you're talking about, you know, a person. Every person has their own car if they're on the road, but if they're on the road half the time, then two people can share the car. And then what's coming into it now is that some of the car companies are developing apps, ride sharing apps for that car. So I think it was Volvo launched a car a few weeks ago, the XC60, and it comes with an app where you can register. If you buy the car, you can register your partner, your friend, your mum, your dad, whatever, to share on the app, and then they get access to the car by using the app. It unlocks it. They can get into it. And it's a ride-sharing app that's available now that's just come out with the XC60. So,
I see.
Yeah, that can be very easily adaptable to company car use.
Yeah, in my former company, we did, you know, we'd have a fleet of cars and you would sign the car out as such. But we did have a range of cars that we had to plug in. And yeah. In order for them to work, because there was a lot of technical equipment on board, so I used to have to charge my car every evening, wake up and then drive out. So in some ways, you're used to doing some of those behaviours already. But like you said, I think it would work really well where there are so many cars that are just idle all day. I mean, you go and try and get a car sometimes and they'll all be out, but most of the time they were just sat there. So it would be a great place to start this, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, driving a car is handy. A parking space, parking lots are just redundant spaces most of the time. It's a complete waste of land.
Incredibly,
because,
yeah.
The cars are just asleep.
Incredibly. And you think of how many cars are on the road. Now, if they are all electric, then they're all effectively generators, and they can all create power, so which can be plugged back into a grid of some sort, whether it be your house, the shop, the office, or whatever. So, you know, there are other ways that they're looking at this, and it goes back to what we were saying just a bit earlier as well, is that it gives the opportunity for the car owner to get that energy from a clean source, from solar or wind or whatever source is powering the building, rather than from a fossil fuel station out in the desert somewhere.
Okay. Motoring journalist Damien Reid is with us, just back from Japan, on Drive Live Talks Automotive this afternoon. We're going to come back, talk a little bit about flying autonomous taxi drones in Dubai. How much of a transport solution is that? And when are we going to see these drones actually in effect? Any questions you have, if you want to recite the third law of thermodynamics, which Bertrand has, we're just going to look that up and come back and try and sound clever. Please get in touch, 4001. We'll find the free app.
This is Drive Live. Get in touch with the show.
Text us on 4001.
It's Drive Live Talks, talking automotive today with Damien Reid, motoring journalist, who is with us just back from Japan. You've been in Tokyo talking to the big boss at Nissan, who says, basically, no more internal combustion engine cars. We're going to replace those lines by 2020 to 25 with electric vehicles. And that's a bold claim. It's a stated claim. My son said something to me the other day, Damien, that I thought was interesting. He's 14. In theory, I think within 3 or 4 years, he could do a test here, be driving a car on the roads. I've just realized what that means. That's frightening me slightly. But it is true. That's going to happen. But he said something to me the other day. He said, look, it might be that my generation is the last generation to get a driving license, or even misses having to have a driving license for a car as we know it now. And he's right. It may well be the first car he drives is an electric car.
Absolutely. And I think already that he's in the minority of that age group to actually want a driving license.
Maybe.
I think at the moment, people are more interested in getting the latest iPhone than they are in terms of getting their driver's license.
Do you think so?
I think so. I think a car is becoming, it's not the thing, as we talked about a thing on a show before, where it's like,
I agree with you. I'm with Damien.
We all
because
busting our gut to get a car when we turned 16. As soon as we got our license, we wanted to get a car.
Yeah.
I don't see kids doing that now.
I remember a girl when I was at school, and she did a driving test on her birthday, on her 17th birthday. And of course, you can be 17, but and she passed. And at 17, she was off. That was it. And it was, but there was a real buzz around that, and that's how it was. But now, I can call an Uber from my phone. I can get a Kareem on my phone. I don't need a car.
Oh, but the experience and pleasure from being able to drive.
But you're of that generation, aren't you?
I'm with you.
That.
I'm with you. I agree 100%.
It means I'm getting old, doesn't it?
I didn't want to put it that way, but yeah.
No, but I'm just surprised. I guess for me, I was, my birthday, as we know, is in September. So of my...
Well, what's the date again? Just remind us.
26.
26, yeah.
Keep, mark that. It in your diary
in
for
diary.
Next year. Yep. No, but in all seriousness, I was the oldest in the class sort of thing. So I was the first that was able to get the driving license and the provisional and do all those things. But for me, I remember the desire wasn't just to be able to pass the test, but having the freedom to go somewhere.
Mm.
And okay, yes, you can get lots and lots of taxis and apps and stuff, but that ability to just be able to get in a car and drive, I'm amazed that that's gone. I'm really sad.
I mean, I agree with you. I'm 1,000% on your side, but from what I've seen is that that's the case, and people are, kids who are sort of 16 to 20 are more interested in grabbing a Kareem or an Uber or a taxi than they are in going through the process of getting a car. And I think, you know, your son is probably right. He probably is the last generation that's going to well, actually, who's going to need a driving license for a short term? Because after that, you won't need one. It'll be an option. It'll be a hobby thing. It's like getting your pilot's license. No one wants it, but some people like planes.
See, that's even more frightening, but you are right. It will be autonomous, won't it? So we will be driven, and there will be different ways of ride-sharing, and it will become the norm. At the moment, it's just odd to think about, that I couldn't just come out, put the key in, and drive to work every day, but it won't be like that.
No. I mean, you know, they're going to show a car next week. Mercedes are showing a car at Gitex, which is basically a pod. And it's been running around for about 2 years, but they're around the world at various exhibitions. It was first shown in Vegas in 2015, but it's a pod, and you sit inside it, and the windows become basically screens inside, so you can play entertainment or information or whatever on the screens. You can talk to the car, it'll drive you around, but there's no driver. And it's big four seats facing towards each other as a luxury vehicle, but that is what they call level 5 autonomy, where there's absolutely no intention of having a driver at all.
I have an image, sorry, in my head of, and I was first thinking there, if you've got two seats, two people facing two people in an autonomous vehicle, so you're being driven around, you could watch TV, you could be on the phone, you could be on a computer, you can get things done, you could do a bit more work, you could read, whatever you do, you could communicate with other people, but I have a feeling you're still going to see people opposite each other on their phone.
Well, I thought it could be quite sociable.
That's what I was thinking. Then I thought, well, look, we're in the modern age here. We're going to, you know, you'd be texting, you'd be WhatsApping somebody or whatever it is.
The person next to you, you'd be WhatsApping the person next to you. Using the Wi-Fi in this pod. Probably. Someone's texted and said, getting a license is about 10,000 dirham here, so why waste the money? That's another reason. I guess it is an expensive thing to take.
And how many tests now is it? Like 20 tests or 50 tests or something to get a license here?
You have to do a set number of lessons. 30, 40 lessons.
Ridiculous number, yeah. I know with people I used to work with would set aside 6 months going for tests twice a week in order to get their license. It is something like 50 times you have to go to the driving school to get the thing ticked off. Now, obviously, that's a major disincentive to get a license here when you can get the Uber, you can jump on the metro, you can do other ways to get around town. So that's another thing that has to be looked at, I guess, from an industry side. To encourage people to drive cars, is it's not making it easier. But then you don't want it to make it easier to drive a car either. You've got to be skilled and know what you're doing. So it's a...
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I wish more people on the roads did 50 more lessons, to be completely honest with you, particularly on Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Road at the moment on the E311 probably. I guess there are a lot of people who might agree with that. So the last generation to drive cars is with us now. They're young people at the moment. Oh, I sound so old saying that. But that's what we've learned today, isn't it?
And yeah, someone else has texted in and said, finally, something that sounds like the Jetsons. I've been waiting for this since 2000.
Al texted in as well. See, Al's agreeing with me, 50 lessons, 50 driving lessons, and they're still this bad. But, in theory, the one issue here is, in theory, we are going to see this happen, whether we like it or not. We're going to see more hybrid vehicles, electric vehicles. We're going to start seeing level 5 autonomous vehicles. We may well be seeing drone helicopters, single or two people electric helicopters turning up soon. That's fine. But it is as well about the change. If we start having to share electric vehicles, some people are going to balk at that. I worry about the fact that, you know, you have to pick up a car here and the condition of it, the cleanliness and all. That's an issue. There's a mentality shift necessary as well.
Very much so. Very much. And for the last, you know, as this topic has been coming up more and more often, for the last 6 months, I've been analysing myself as I drive around Dubai, and I drive from the office to the apartment to the shops to wherever, and you're in the rush hour traffic. And I sort of sit there and ask myself, am I enjoying this process at the moment? Do I enjoy driving? The answer is not really yes. On the weekends when you get to go to Hatta or down to Fujairah, or you get to, that's a different story. That I love that. That's fantastic. But when I have to sit and I'm stuck in the traffic in Hesse Street at 5:30 in the afternoon, am I enjoying that? No, I'm not. Would I rather sit back and be checking my WhatsApp and doing whatever else and have a machine just commute me there in comfort? I think I would.
We could probably give you a podcast of this to listen to. That might be nice.
I could listen to it all day long.
Yeah, you could, couldn't you? That would be good. But you're right. I was behind a guy on Hesse Street today who was going really slowly and clearly unconcerned with other drivers on the phone.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating because it's this courtesy thing. If we had autonomous vehicles, courtesy would be just part of the fabric.
Yeah, and the aggression that's on the roads too, that is something you take note of too, is that people just become aggressive behind the wheel. Would that get rid of that? Would you turn up to a place, you know, in a better state of mind? It's little things I've been looking at for the last 6 months or so. I was like, do I actually enjoy this process right now of going underneath Salik and actually not moving?
But I will say I have been a passenger and got some of that stress and anxiety of the road too.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, perhaps. Here's Al says, my son's two. Don't expect he'll ever need to drive or have a license. That's a good point. Marco, the only reason to get a license is to drive an Uber. Just pretty reasonable point. Lots of Lexuses of that shape on the road. Carl says, doesn't agree with you here. Doesn't agree with me either. I'd love to see where companies are getting their statistics from. Majority of HS students, I'm not sure.
High school?
High school students, I suppose it must be. Well done. They're overly eager to get their license. So maybe there is still perception that it is part of, you know, the next phase of life. It's that kind of step, you know. But that's probably going to change, and it will change sooner rather than later.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, then. Damien Reid has been here this afternoon, just back from Japan. It's been really interesting to talk to you, Damien. Always is. Good to have you here. Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.